what I am going to tell you as a background, it is purely philosophical. And I am not going to touch that aspect of the subject. I am taking up a more practical side of spiritual living, but practice is preceded by a theory or a structure of philosophical background, which is called Vedanta philosophy. The metaphysical foundations of the relationship between God, world and individual, to which I made reference, are to be found in the Vedanta philosophy. You will find it easier to steer the course of your life towards its wondrous destination, highest peace of mind, and in the end, immortal life. Actually, what I am going to tell you is the final conclusion of all learning and everything else to which I made reference is a preparatory procedure. It is implied that you have a good knowledge of the preparatory stages through other aspects of philosophical thought, and you have to bring them together into a holistic way of approach, so that all knowledge becomes one knowledge in the end. I was principally emphasizing the aspect of love of God. Here is a mysterious but highly elevating, soul-transforming picture before you, because such a thing as the love of God escapes the attention of most people who may be religious in their own way, because to love God, it is not enough if you are merely religious in the ordinary sense of the term. Religions that are known to the world, the isms as you call them, are the outer form taken by an inner significance, which is the quintessence of spiritual aspiration. Actually, you will find to love a thing is different from doing something in regard to that thing. You may do several things in regard to a particular object, but that does not necessarily mean the same as to love it. There is an action of the soul taking place in every form of affection. A mother knows what it is to love a child. There is no need for ceremonies or gestures for the mother to show her affection to the child. It is there, and that is enough. Whoever in this world is practically acquainted in one's own life what it is to love will know how it differs from any other occupation of the mind of a human being. In love, you don't simply think. It is something different from thinking something. And you are not going to do anything also. What happens then? You may be finding it difficult to adjust yourself to the necessities that go together with this so-called act of the soul we call love. A lost friend, as it were, whom you have not seen for years together, a bosom friend of yours, your alter ego, with whom you lived for long, as one soul in two bodies, has disappeared for some reason, whatever that reason be. After years you are seeing him in front of you. You run up into an ecstasy. Oh, you have come. And you do not know what to do at that time. You will lose all your sense and the apparatus of thinking with which you may express your feeling on seeing that friend who is suddenly there before you after many years. You do not know what to do at that time. Are you going to embrace him? Are you going to hug him? Are you going to request him to be seated comfortably? Will you entertain him? Will you speak to him in a sweet tone, beautiful words? Will you inquire about his welfare? You do not know what to do at that time. You are torn up into pieces of feeling. And the surge of your being rushes forth in the love that you are unable to express by external means. This is what you feel when you have a lost friend standing before you. In the midst of a large gathering or a crowd where there is stampede, a little child is lost by its mother. Where the child has gone, nobody knows. People are running helter-skelter, as we have in Kumbh Mela. The child has been lost. The mother does not know whether it has been killed by stampede. She strikes her breast with great grief, strikes her head on the ground, "My dear child, one alone that I had has gone." Many days afterward, the child runs to the mother, screaming, "Mummy, I am here." What does the mother feel at that time? Does she perform any ritual to express her love toward the child? What does God want from you? When you love something immensely, you want to make a gesture of offering something to it. Because you do not know in what other way you can express your love to it. Rarely people love in this world. In so-called affections and friendships of the life of people, we find commercial relationship, a give and take policy. If you do this, I like you. If you do not do that, I do not like you. This kind of liking is not love. Will you tell God in the same way, "If you give this, I love you. If you do not give this, I do not care for you"? Will you deal with God in this manner? The importance of the principle of the existence of God will free you from this tangle of confusion as to how to relate yourself to God. Mortal expressions of human thought cannot understand what love is. There are, however, instructions in scriptures dealing with this path of love, how to gradually move in the direction of this ultimate consummation of the meaning of love. God, nobody has seen. Certain things which you would like to have, you might not have seen with your eyes. Unseen longings sometimes disturb our soul. I would have liked to have that, but I have not seen that. There is a difference between the act of the soul and the thinking of the mind and the actions of the hands and feet. Inasmuch as the depth of the spirit of affection to God is not clearly intelligible to the ordinary mind, stages of approach to this goal have been prescribed by ancient masters and seers who loved God truly. The saints and the sages about whom you might have heard, whose lives you might have read, and observed the way in which they lived, would perhaps be great instructors to you on the path of love of God. There are types and types of devotees of God. I would like you to read the lives of certain saints known as Nayanars, who lived in what today is called Tamil Nadu, and Alvars, Vaishnava saints. I cannot describe to you how they loved God. You have to read with great concentration of your mind how these great masters of divine devotion lived and manifested their loves to God. The Nayanars were principally devotees of God in the form of Lord Shiva, and the Alvars were devotees of the great Almighty in the form of Vishnu, Narayana. There are 4,000 Tamil poems called Narayana Prabandham in Tamil language, which record the poems expressing the love which these great Alvars had to this supreme being. Those who have studied it and appreciated it consider Narayana Prabandham as equal to Veda itself. It is called Dravida Vedam. Similarly is the case with the lives of the Nayanars. You will be stunned, you will be breathless when you read the lives of these great people. How do you call God? Do you know how you can call God? Oh my dear, it is not enough if you say that. God is not merely dear, He is something more. Oh honey, Anandatene. There was a great saint who expressed God in the form of this bliss of honey, or the honey of bliss. You become crazy when you love something. You get drowned in honey, in nectar. You get drowned in your own soul. You get drowned in the soul of that which you love. Read the life of Saint Meera, of Purandara Das, of Tukaram, of Kabir Das, in addition to those sayings I have mentioned to you just now. The difficulty is proverbial. How would you love God when He is an omnipresent being? This concept of omnipresence is hard to entertain in the mind. So, there is a prescription to you to begin your devotion with actual worships that you can perform in a lesser degree of the concept of omnipresence, such as a portrait of God that you have in your mind, which also it will be difficult for you to entertain for a long time. Don't you keep with you a photograph of the person whom you love? A memento connecting yourself with that person whom you love. You hang a photograph of your deceased father on the wall of your house. It is a portrait. The father is not there, but he represents the father who lived once upon a time. For this purpose, temple worship, for instance, as a means of developing devotion to God, has been prescribed. Even temple worship is not an easy thing. You do not just ring the bell and offer flowers and wave aarti and go away. This is not. The temple is the diagram of the way in which the universe is operating in front of us. The whole universe is there in this little area occupied by the temple. Even to build a temple, it is not easy. There are scriptures known as Vastu Shastras who tell you in minute detail how to construct a temple. Suddenly you don't enter into the Holy of Holies. In well-constructed temples, you have 7 prakaras, 7 corridors, one inside the other, one outside the other, comparable almost, as they say, to the sheaths of this body, or the levels of existence. Bhūloka, Bhūvarloka, Swarloka, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapoloka, Satyaloka, in a cosmical sense. Or the physical body, Annamaya, Pranamaya, Manomaya, Vijnanamaya, Anandamaya, Koshas, inside which is the Atman, light in the Holy of Holies. The Holy of Holies, the innermost Garbhagriha, in all temples you will find it is dark. It is not lit up with electric light. Though today, some of the temples have the electric light also, which is a tragedy, it should not be like that. It is a dark anandamaya of the cosmic existence in which there is a limpid lake of illumination, the Atman shining. I am not going into great details of the pattern of the structure of temples. I am coming to the main point of what you will do when you actually worship in a temple. The Bhakti Shastras tell us there are 4 ways of worship. There can be many other details of these fourfold way, but principally they are designated as 4, known as Charya, Kriya, Yoga and Jnana. We have a temple in the ashram. Vishwanath temple, Lord Vishwanath temple, Lord Sri Krishna temple. There are people who worship this divinity by collecting flowers from gardens. plucking bay leaves from outside, cleaning the temple, keeping it neat and clean, and spick and span. This is worship of God. It is worship of God because you want to keep the precincts of this holy abode of God neat and clean, as your mind should be when you worship God. That person will do only this work. It is one stage. Charya. Kriya is an inner cooperation in the offering of worship, such as keeping the lights of the arati neat and clean, dipping the wicks in the oil, placing it in the proper place, and lighting it up, putting camphor over it, then creating a flame and offering this lamp to the person who actually performed the worship. An internal seva, the inward cooperation in the performing of worship, is the kriya, as they call it. The external cooperation is charya. But before reaching the pinnacle of the actual performance of worship, there are two more stages. The one who is outside has done his duty in bringing flowers, offering billvapatra, and cleaning the temple clean. The inner one has done his own job in providing all the necessities to the performer of the worship, arranging over lamps and other things. But what does the performer himself do? You call them pujaris and all that. Pujari is a very poor word. He himself is an incarnate divinity. As I mentioned to you, very unfortunately these days, everything becomes commercial. It becomes a routine. Mechanically, like a bulldozer moving, you do worship. And mind also is somewhere. It becomes an act without a thought and much less a feeling. This should not be. We should not disregard temples. They are representations visibly before you of the miniature structure of the cosmic operations of God. You must feel a thrill when you enter the temple. It is not like entering a police station or a railway platform. See the difference. Where there is no movement of the heart, there is no affection. A stone heart cannot love anything. Love is a melting process of the very being of yourself. The performer of the worship does a miracle before he actually performs the worship. He does what is called yoga. I mentioned to you there are four stages: charya, kriya, yoga, and jnana. What is this yoga? Yoga is the identification of oneself with the form of the deity to be worshipped. These ways of identification of oneself with the deity and vice versa, identifying the deity with oneself, is known as the performing of nyasas. Anganyasa, karanyasa are the principal ways of nyasas. What is nyasa? It is the placement, fixing of the parts of the form of the deity in your own personality, head of the deity, of the beautiful divinity is my own head, and my head is the head of the divinity. Intensely he feels and thinks in this manner, so that the mind of the divinity enters this performer. Every part of his body gets identified with every part conceived of the divinity. The hand with hand, the feet with the feet, heart with heart, face with face, everything set in tune. Do you know what happens when you practice this kind of meditation? The performer of the worship in deep meditation considers himself as a replica of the divinity that is worshipped. The God possesses him. At least he is expected to possess him. And he is possessed of God. This technique is applicable in various other fields of life also. Thought transference, telepathic communication, and such other things with which you may be acquainted. These methods, and if it is any other person to whom you want to transfer your thought, you think like that person. You become that person. You lose the consciousness of the form of your body as this Mr. So and so. You become that person. Who is thinking? You are not thinking. That person is thinking. Whose mind has to operate according to your wish? This is about telepathic communication, thought transference, etc. This technique is employed in the case of God also in worship. Sometimes the worshipper trembles. If he has really equipped himself with this process of self-identification with the part of Lord Shiva, Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu, whoever he is. Cosmic superstructure of the Almighty is represented in the form of the image or the portrait that is worshipped in the temple. The whole cosmos is vibrating here. Inasmuch as God is everywhere, he has to be present in the idol also. There are some people who decry idol worship. They say it is stupidity. It is not stupidity. If God is everywhere, he has to be even in your pencil, your fountain pen. The pig that you offer in sacrifice, in Homa, and in the idol that you worship, in the portrait, in the yantra, in a diagram, everywhere he has to be. Otherwise, you cannot accept the omnipresence of God. People who disbelieve idol worship as a kind of stupidity and a meaningless caricature of divine devotion do not understand what God is. So this performer of the worship gets possessed due to this self-identification of the structure of his being with the structure of divinity whom he is worshipping. There is another stage called jnana in the process of worship. Charya, kriya, yoga. I have explained to you briefly what yoga is in the course of performing worship in a temple. If it is not in a temple, it may be in an altar in your own room also. There is a mini temple people have sometimes in their own puja room, altar of worship. And the same process will take place in your adoration of the deity that you have got in a mini form in the altar that you have kept in your own puja room. The process is the same. While yoga is an identification of yourself with the form of the deity, identification of the form of the deity with your own self, jnana takes you a step further. When God possesses you, in the act of the yoga that I explained to you, you cease to be yourself. The energy, the power, the consciousness, the form of God has entered into you and taken possession of the whole structure of your being. When you act, it acts. When you speak, it speaks. This occurrence is sometimes called avesha. The superabundance of being possessed by the deity. You can be possessed by anything if you love it deeply. Why do we find it difficult to love anything? The hard ego prevents you from giving any concession to another person. The ego says, I am all in all. Who cares for another? It is not possible to love anything when the ego adumbrates its hard single point of view and carries on a political affection, as people have in a parliament. Every member has affection for another member, but what kind of affection it is, you know very well. They are broken pieces struggling to get united. Such a thing is not affection. To love God, you have to love everything. This also follows as a consequence of the love of God. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam cha mahi pashyati is a line from the Bhagavad Gita. When you see me in everything, you see everything also in me. The presence of God in every nook and corner and cranny of creation makes you feel a divinity presence in everything in the world. I have already mentioned to you, it is not easy to love God. I have to repeat this again and again. Until you have a stone-like heart, this ego melts, this will not be possible. Lover of God, a true lover of God, transcends the realm of shame. Because when you love God, you may become something which will be ununderstandable to the society, the public of people. Nobody could understand Meera. The queen of a kingdom, dancing on the streets. What would the king feel about it? My wife, the queen, is dancing in the street like a crazy lady. When true love emanates from the personality of a person, the difference between the lover and the beloved ceases. God, I am not going to that side of the matter just now. I shall touch upon it after some time. What actually is your relationship with God? When you love God, what is your position? And what is the position of God? Sometimes it is said that there is a duality of concept in the Bhakti Marga or the path of love of God. It may be so in one sense of the term, because when you love something, you behold before you a something not yourself exactly. But in the case of God, it is not something that you are loving, all things it is. So the duality which is generally said to be in the bhakti marga diminishes itself and it becomes a non-dual love. So bhakti leads to jnana in the end. Non-dual love, can you conceive? Whom are you loving in non-dual affection? Are you loving God? Are you loving yourself? The lower forms of devotion known as apara bhakti have the appurtenances of items of worship, gestures and performances of different kinds. But in the higher bhakti, you love in such an intensity that the purpose of love is fulfilled in its consummation. Do you know what is the consummation of love? What do you want from the object that you love? What is your expectation? You want it to be very near you. You want to touch it. You want it to enter into it. You do not want that to be separate from you at all. My child is my child, cries the mother in love. It is not anymore my, it is me only. The my becomes me. Inasmuch as you have to accept the presence of God in all things, accept His omnipresence, loving such a thing is loving the entire creation at the same time. Aparabhakti becomes parabhakti, which is identical with jnana. Jnana does not mean learning. It is not academic knowledge. It is the actual apprehension of the true being of God Himself. It is not the object of God, but the very being of God. Inseparable from yourself also, because God is omnipresent. In this tremendous ecstasy of the identification of the omnipresence of God with one's own self, puja, worship becomes consummate. In heightened forms of worship, the performer, the pujari, waves the arati before the deity, all round he will go in a circle, round and round, round and round. Finally, in certain forms of worship, he waved the arati to himself. You might not have seen such a thing mostly in temples. The ecstasy of his performance ceases to distinguish himself, his existence from the existence of the God that he is worshipping. Arati turns into himself. I have heard somewhere it is said that Swami Vivekananda once was performing worship in his ecstasy. He turned the arati to himself, to the chagrin and the shock of all people. Are you worshipping yourself or are you worshipping God? Only a worshipper will know what worship is. Whatever I have told you just now is the inner significance of the fourfold types of worship: charya, kriya, yoga and jnana. And I also mentioned to you, you must read the lives of these saints. Saint Mira, Saint Haridas, Saint Purandaradas, Saint Kabirdas, Alvars, Nayanars. Hari Om Tassat.